Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now.
I'm going to be playing an interview today that Andy Green did with Rod Stewart. And Andy and Rod start out by talking about Rod's new album that he released this year called Blood Red Roses. And then they do a whole interview that's sort of life lessons. It's one of our last word interviews that run on the last page of the magazine, and it goes in a lot of different directions. And we'll just get right to it. Here's Andy Green and Rod Stewart.
Beautiful day for late September in London.
Great, I'm glad to hear it. Enjoying the new album. It's fantastic.
Thanks, mate. Thank you very much. That means a lot coming from someone like your good self.
All right, thank you. So how long ago did you start working on it?
Oh, I don't know. Probably 18 months ago. Obviously not 18 months solidly, but, right. You know, we started thrashing out ideas and sending ideas to each other. That would be me and my co-producer and co-writer, Kevin Savigar, who was in the band in the 70s. Then he left through illness, and now he's back in the band. So, but yeah, I'd say 18 months ago.
Tell me your goals going into it and how you wanted it to be different than the previous album.
No, didn't really. I don't plan anything that much. I want it to be, and it was, spontaneous. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't want to do is, be writing songs like Stay With Me and Heart Legs and Tonight's the Night.
Right.
I wanted to attempt to do something a little bit more age appropriate, and hopefully I've succeeded.
Yeah.
Just tackle things that I've never tried to write about before. Mm-hmm. For instance, Farewell is a love song to one of my dear, dear, dear pals that passed away a few years back.
Time, our space, our songs, our generation. And I'll never know again someone as genuine. Someone.
We grew up with each other through the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. Mm-hmm. We remained good friends. So he saw me from when I had absolutely nothing and totally unknown all the way through to the success I had later in life. That was the idea. Try and just be as honest and, personable as I could on the songs.
Yeah, so tell me about the song Didn't I and what inspired that.
You left home for the city with Hollywood stars in your eyes. Now your mother.
You know, I have to be honest with you. I didn't sit right down and write, say, well, I need to warn parents of the, because I'm a parent of 8 children and I need to warn them about the dangers of drugs. That would be coming a bit ripe coming from a rock star. Mm-hmm. But, the way I write the songs now is I do a la-di-da-di-da over the track and I sing whatever comes into my head. And this is exactly what I did with Maggie May all those years ago.
Wake up, Maggie.
And all of a sudden, I just sung, didn't I do the best for you, tried to make you stay in school, didn't I? Mm-hmm. And that just happened. It was funneled down for me somehow, channeled to me.
Yeah. And how?
And that's the way I write songs. I'm writing an album now, actually, well. So I've got a bit of time off. And still don't know what the themes of the songs are going to be, but, by 18 months, I should have 12, 15 good songs.
Oh, wow. So tell me about Cold Old London. Are you drawing on a personal experience with that, or are you a character?
Said something.
It's a bit of both, I suppose. There was a period before I got married to Rachel in the mid-90s where I felt, all this shagging and the drinking was leading me nowhere. I wasn't particularly happy. Mm-hmm. And I was getting older and the girls were getting younger. I think that's the song's a reflection of that period in my life.
Right. And so what drives you to keep making new albums when the industry is in such a bad place and sales for everybody are way down? Just what drives you to keep doing this?
It's what I do, It's you don't just down tools because the industry's doing badly. I always think I've got a lot of friends out there that have followed my career for many, many years, and they do turn up at concerts all over the globe. And if 10% of that wonderful audience I play to buy the album, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had tremendous success in selling millions and millions of albums. Mm-hmm. So I'm not that bothered if it doesn't sell 10 million. You know, everybody else can do that. Mm-hmm. I've had my shot at it. Yeah. I'm making albums for me and a few friends.
Huh. And there were so many years in which you didn't write many songs. In the past few years, it seems as if your songwriting gift has returned to you. Do you get what happened about why you're suddenly so prolific again?
Oh, there's many reasons for it. I mean, obviously the book came out and, yeah. You know, meeting friends and family and having a couple of glasses of wine and saying, oh, do you remember when we did this and that and this?
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing. And just the process of writing songs now, I was always locked in a studio for months on end, you know, 2 hours getting a drum sound and never seeing daylight, and it became laborious.
Mm-hmm.
And then for this, the first album, Time, Kevin and I started just using samples and kicking a few ideas around, and it went on from there.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way we do it now. So I see the sunshine and daylight a lot more than I used to.
Are you going to start playing these songs live?
Oh, yeah, we do four of them already. We do Grace, Hole in My Heart,
mm-hmm.
And two others. Holy and Tumbling we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do four altogether.
And you're working on a new one now, you say?
Yeah, we've just so many tracks left over from the last album,
mm-hmm.
that and they were all good. I just didn't have time to finish them. I'm finishing them off.
Oh, cool. Wow.
It's a good place. It's a lovely. It's become, my friend, a hobby.
Yeah.
I suppose it. Whereas it used to be a chore. Oh God, if I go get this song fucking finished. Now it's a delight. It's a complete turnaround, a completely turned turnaround.
Right. I'm sure in the 70s and 80s you felt pressure to make radio hits, right? And that pressure is sort of gone now because radio's changed so much.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we don't go in and say, well, that's going to be a single. We like to make a song that has melody, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and lyrical content, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as trying to knock out singles, you know, no, we don't.
Yeah.
It's a body of work. That's all I'm aiming for.
I want to switch over and do our big last word interview. That'll be the whole last page of the magazine where you share some wisdom that you've learned through the years.
Yeah.
So do you think you're a better father in your 70s than you were in your 30s?
Oh, I should hope so. My
mm-hmm.
God.
Mm-hmm.
If I haven't learned the trade now, I never will.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I had my first child, I was 17 or 18, I think, so...
Uh-huh.
Obviously, everybody knows that was a mistake, and
mm-hmm.
I didn't keep tabs on her because she was she went to a foster home because neither mm-hmm. me nor her mother were broke, you know,
mm-hmm.
so we couldn't afford to keep her. And then she disappeared for a great length of time. I'm sure you may know all this.
Yeah.
And she resurfaced in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
but now we're good buddies. I just got an email from her just now.
Wow.
And it's nice we call each other, you know, Dad and my daughter. Although it's a strange feeling because I didn't change any nappies or take her to school, but
mm-hmm.
she's still blood.
Yeah.
Have I got better? Yeah, of course I have. Children have always been important to me, very important.
Mm-hmm.
They always have, but there were times when I had Kimberly and Sean in the late 70s where I was considerably in debt,
mm-hmm.
and had to go out and work a hell of a lot,
mm-hmm.
So I missed a great deal of their growing up. But we've sat down and we've talked about it. I said, your dad wasn't out on going parties and a shagging and a drinking. I was working my ass off trying to get out of debt.
Yeah, and there's so much more wisdom that you have now that you can pass on to your young kids from just life experience that
yeah.
you have back then.
Yeah, it's mostly football wisdom. yeah, I built a lovely AstroTurf pitch for my two youngest boys.
Mm-hmm.
One's 12, another one's 7, and we go out there every evening and
mm-hmm.
try and teach them a few things.
Right.
That is the most wonderful thing ever, you know, just playing football at my age with your kids.
And how do your knees feel afterwards?
No, the knee is pretty good, actually, now. I had a stem cell injection.
Oh, wow.
And it's really great. Now I'm having trouble with the bottom of my foot.
Oh.
Seem to have done something. I've actually got an air boot on. Have you ever seen one of those?
No.
It's an air boot. It's the most unglamorous looking thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to what we were talking about. Hold on, Andy. I've got to take my top off. I'm boiling.
Okay, sure.
Right, mate. We're having an Indian winter, Indian summer here in England.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Now, do you ever think about what would have happened to your life if you didn't develop a singing voice? About what would have happened to you if you weren't a singer?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. I don't know. I mean, when I started, it was all I wanted to do. There's only two things I could do is play soccer, football, as we call it here,
mm-hmm.
and sing. And I got a chance at being a pro footballer. I didn't think I was particularly good.
Mm-hmm.
I did it because my dad wanted one of his sons to be a footballer.
Uh-huh.
And I was the last one, so I gave it a try, but I wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the time I fell into music. So I don't know, Andy, I don't know what I would have done, mate.
Mm-hmm.
Christ knows, it's a scary thought.
So just tell me the one bit of advice that you wish that you were able to like give to yourself at age 20.
Age 20? Probably cut back on the drinking.
Uh-huh.
You know, there wasn't much I regret. You know, I absorbed all the information I could, all the help that I could. So there's not much I would change.
Mm-hmm.
In my 20s, it all went so well for me, you know, from being discovered singing on a railway station, and it just kept going up and up and up and up and up, you
but
know.
But you think you drank too much, though?
Yeah, we all did. Well, you know, it's in the Faces, we drank a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
It was almost like a competition with which one can kill themselves first.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's a bit morbid, it really wasn't.
Right.
It was more like which one's going to fall down first.
Yeah, you never had a like real addiction problem. You used drugs, but it was never a huge issue that was hurting you.
No, it wasn't. I was always a bit anti with the drugs. I went to a period with the Faces when drugs were so much purer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we'd make a gram last for about 5 concerts. It was such good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always the good old football. You know, if I was playing, I had to train. So it sort of wasn't agreeing with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I always drank. I do drink a lot.
Yeah.
You know, now I love a couple of glasses of wine every night, 7 days of the week, but only two.
Mm-hmm.
Three if I'm celebrating.
Right. And you managed to avoid super hard drugs back in the 70s and
80s, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I've never smoked either, so.
Oh, wow.
Never smoked marijuana or anything like that.
Did you just avoid that to save your voice?
No, not at all. Smoking has never, ever appealed to me. Even when I was in my teens,
oh, wow.
It never appealed to me.
Wow, I guess that's weird because so many people in your teenage years that were smoking cigarettes constantly, right? It was just...
Well, you know, my brothers and my sister.
Yeah.
I mean, mum and dad all smoked.
Wow. Huh.
A long, long time ago.
Yeah.
But I do remember them all having what we call a fag. We call them fags in this country.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they all smoked.
So
No one does now, though.
I was reading that you just watched Breaking Bad.
It's stupid, isn't it?
Yeah.
I never have time for them TV shows, but, you know, I was long tour last year, and I just watched it and just enjoyed it so much, I don't want to see anything else. People say, well, now you must watch that. I said, nothing is as good as Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
But here there's another one now, but without the main characters. It's all about Call Saul, apparently.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. I encourage you to watch it.
Yeah, all right, I'm going to start watching that tonight.
So then, who was your favorite character on Breaking Bad?
Pinkman. Jesse Pinkman.
Why?
He's just a little shit.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something about him that was loyal.
Yeah.
You know, he saw through all the bad stuff and knew that he was loyal.
Yeah.
She was lovely. His wife too. She was gorgeous.
Ann Gunn. Yeah, Ann Gunn.
So I'll start watching Call Saul tonight.
And how'd you feel, Abe? About Hank dying? I'm sure that bummed you out to see Hank be killed.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, but then you walk away from it, they're all getting paid, they all get up and go to bed and finish work. So
right.
Doesn't...
Right. So I feel like you are one of the few classic rock icons who's not going on a farewell tour right now.
Yeah, and I'm also the right side of the grass,
uh-huh.
still, thank the Lord.
Yeah,
it doesn't, you know, I got in a lot of trouble for slating Elton off, and maybe should have kept my mouth closed.
Mm-hmm.
I was on that program, Whatever Happens Next, where they insist you get drunk as a skunk.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said it reeks of you know, scraping in the money, and he's already said that he's going to do more concerts after the 300 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, we all have to retire sooner or later, but it certainly is the furthest thing away from me and me at the moment. So, I'm having too much fun.
So a farewell tour is just never going to happen for you.
No, I won't say never, but I don't think I'll do it like that. I might just, I don't know, I haven't even thought about it, mate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even thought about it. It'll be a sad day, because it's been a huge part of my life forever.
Yeah. Is your favorite part of your day performing live on stage, do you still feel the same thrill that you felt doing it in your 20s?
Even more so now. You know, when I see people out there that I know, they're not as old as me, but people have followed me for a long time, it's a warm feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, to see what a job. You know, I get paid for getting on the stage and singing,
right.
Sending everybody home happy.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like being a footballer or a sportsman.
Right.
You can send people go home unhappy if you lose.
Right.
But I'm in a win-win situation. It's just wonderful.
Right.
And there will be a day when it's over, but I'm extremely thankful. That's all I can say.
Yeah,
for how my career's gone.
And to still be able to pack Madison Square Garden when you've been doing this about 50 years. I mean,
it's truly remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Truly remarkable.
Now, you say on the album that you can't even boil an egg. Is that true for you, Duber Cook?
Absolutely true.
Uh-huh.
True, mate. In the 70s, it was a different era then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to have girlfriends we'd shack up with, you know. How old are you then?
I am 37.
Oh, you're a youngster.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd shack up with girls and then you sort of get fed up with them and then, you know, they'd leave or you'd kick them out. Horrible, and then you realize, oh, who's going to do me dinner? You know, who's going to cook me breakfast? And you find yourself having to, you know, walk down to the local cafe. Because I'm still absolutely hopeless. I cannot cook to save my life.
So,
if I had to do a boil, if I had to make a boiled egg, as my wife said, the last time I tried to make a boiled egg, I had about 20 pans and things out of the cupboard. You know, real mess.
So then tell me
to be proud of.
So then tell me the last time in your life that you cooked a home meal for yourself.
No, never.
Never.
Never. Never. No, I don't mind a bit of toast and a cup of tea in the afternoon, but other than that, I've done nothing. Shameful. Shame on you, Stuart.
Think if you lost everything and had to move with your family into a tiny house back where you grew up, that you could manage life?
Well, I'd have to.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have to, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be a shock, but
mm-hmm.
that's where I came from.
Right.
You know, I came from a very small house with a big family.
Mm-hmm.
The Stuarts were, you know, there was five of us, two brothers, two sisters, and me and my mum and dad, and we all lived more or less in two rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Two rooms downstairs and two rooms upstairs. We shared one bathroom, and we all lived together.
Yeah. And you were happy, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the funny thing. It was a wonderful day today. I'll just run this by you.
Mm-hmm.
I've had this wonderful indoor swimming pool built here in England.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gorgeous, you know. I spent a lot of money on it.
Mm-hmm.
And my two brothers came over today, and we all jumped in the pool. And I said, I bet this is the first time we've ever been in the ocean, a pool, anything like it, the three of us. And it was true. Never done it. My brother, he's going to be 90 next year. My sister's going to be 90 next year,
wow.
Almost. My other's 81. There they were, up and down, swimming, and absolutely loved it.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And so we all looked at each other and said, wow, I wish Mum and Dad were here, you know.
At what period in your life do you think you were the happiest?
Now.
Wow, why?
Without a shadow of a doubt, now.
Why?
I've never been so content in all my life.
Huh.
You know, look at what I've got. I mean, apart from the financial side of things, lovely houses, you know, I know that's all materialistic stuff, but I have the most gorgeous wife, and I have eight wonderful children and two little ones.
Yeah.
It's just fabulous. They'll be home from school in a minute. They're all going to jump in the pool, and I can't wait to get in there with them.
Wow, you know.
This is the most wonderful period of my life.
Well, I've spoken to so many famous musicians who complain to me about fame and the burdens of all the money they're making and the burdens of celebrity and the fans, but you've never minded that ever.
Well, why don't they fuck off and don't do it?
Right.
You know, I love it.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like about being in a public eye is when someone's rude to you, you're trying to have your dinner, and they shove, you know, a bit of paper in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, you don't do autographs anymore, I do selfies.
Right.
Everyone's got cameras, I've done dozens of selfies all day. But, you know, look how much we've, look what the business has given to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the avenue to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from when I was a kid, all I wanted to do was sing. It was a burning desire. I've got to sing. I want to sound like Sam Cooke.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be Otis Redding, you know. That was it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Muddy Waters, the way he played slide guitar. It's just all I wanted to do. So if those guys don't like it, pack it in.
Right.
Give the money to charity.
Right.
Don't moan about it and keep the money. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Do something useful with it.
Uh-huh.
Give it away.
And so when were you...
Don't get it, mate. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're totally right. And so when were you the least happy in your whole life? What was the worst part?
Well, I wasn't happy when I had the cancer scare, but, you know, I was a realist about it, and I was lucky I had it cut out and was over with. But, you know, probably going through the divorce to Rachel Hunter was the worst down period, you know, around... say 1999,
and
lo and behold, out of the sky came my darling wife, Penny. On the same day that I broke up with Rachel, Penny appeared.
Wow!
At the Dorchester Hotel, and she was dared by one of her friends to go over and ask for Rod Stewart's autograph, and she did.
Wow! And then
talk about a simple twist of fate.
Wow, that's incredible.
And, but that was the most down period I can remember.
And so tell me what you learned, about yourself in that time period.
Well, on relationships, first of all, don't discuss things when you've had a glass of wine and you're just about to go to bed.
Okay.
Don't have arguments before you go to bed. Wait until the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a much better listener now than I've ever been before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I let my wife more or less have her own way. You know?
Okay.
She, you know, I don't argue as much as I used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think you know, the talking about things is the most important, and more importantly, being able to listen.
Right.
And share romantic things. I'm a terrible old romantic. My wife and I, when the kids go to bed, we have candlelit dinners every night.
Wow.
It's so lovely.
Wow. Do you think being married to you back in the 70s, it was sort of hard because you were just so busy?
Oh, yeah. It was ridiculous. I got married in 79. I shouldn't have done. My dad, who was alive, my mum and dad were alive then, both said you're far too young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was 40, I think. No, 30-something.
Mm-hmm.
And they said you're far too young, you know, and I wandered. There was still a lot of women, you know, it was just a total tearaway.
Right.
As you probably know.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I've been embarrassed about, and I've tried to right my wrongs, is the way I broke off relationships.
Yeah.
You know, I just disappear, do a ghost, disappear,
but you're,
broke hearts, not proud of it.
But you're on good terms with so many of your exes, which is a pretty unique thing.
Yeah, well, we've all grown up a bit. There was a period where we all bloody hated each other, and you know, but now everything is just wonderful with Rachel, who's the mother of Liam and Renee.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Amberger is the mother of Ruby, and Alana is the mother of Sean and Kimberly.
Right.
We all get on fine when I'm in Los Angeles.
Right. So do
really wonderful.
Do you think a song like Hot Legs that would be greeted a bit differently in this modern era?
I don't know how you would have dealt. I mean, I don't know, mate. I can't answer that question, really. I'm too long in the tooth right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have to. You'd have to ask one of the younger bands. Would you write a song like that?
Right.
Doesn't seem appropriate nowadays.
Right. You know, I think it's sort of interesting that the Jeff Beck group and the Faces, they were both very short-lived. Do you think you're better suited to life as a solo artist, that being in a band is just sort of hard for you?
No, I enjoyed being in a band. I really did. I loved being in the Jeff Beck group, but and you know, I'm a loyal person, I believe, when it comes to musicians and bands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very loyal to the guys in my band now, but to get back to Jeff Beck, he fired Woody. You know,
right.
He fired my soul brother.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know, I've got to go. He's my man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's how I was out of the Jeff Beck group.
Mm-hmm.
And then we stumbled on the Small Faces and became the Faces, as you know.
Yeah.
And I would have stayed with that band forever. But I think Woody was the first one to go.
Right.
Ronnie Lane was losing interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fell apart. But I think we took it as far as we could.
Yeah. You know, do you think fans need to sort of let go of the fantasy that you and Jeff Beck are ever going to, like, reunite and perform together again and record together again?
I didn't know. I didn't know there were people out there that wanted me and Jeff to get. I mean, it sure is a great lineup. It's
mm-hmm.
my voice and his guitar. It's a match made in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be a lovely thing to do. It would be a complete left-hand turn.
Mm-hmm.
And we did try it once, but we couldn't see eye to eye. I think we had a serious clash of egos.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, never say never. I know it's a cliche, but really, I'm up for it if he's up for it.
Yeah.
But we both want to produce. That's the thing.
Right. Right. I just think some sort of a blues rock record of the two of you could be explosive, you know.
You're right. You're spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you put it out there, my man.
Okay.
And let me see what he does.
Okay. So then, tell me the most indulgent purchase that you've ever made.
Well, would be a Ferrari Enzo.
Uh huh.
But I spend a lot of money on art. But what I do spend a lot of money on is private planes going to watch my football team all over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, anybody who had the money that I've had would do the same thing.
Yeah.
You're here, who knows when life's going to end. Too many of my friends are under the grass now.
Mm-hmm.
Spend it and enjoy yourself.
Just tell me a bit about that Ferrari and like when you bought it.
Well, when I bought it, it was around $600,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're worth about $1.5 million now.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get one for under $1.5 million.
Wow.
And I sold it because I didn't sort of look into the seating situation. My wife, being 6'1½", couldn't get into the car.
Okay.
So I sold it.
Right.
Do you know there's a Lamborghini coming out next month? It's called a Lamborghini Miura that I sold for £6,000 in 1971. Lamborghini took it back and refurbished it, and it's going to be on the market starting price $1.5 million.
Wow.
Wow. £1.5 million, not even dollars.
Wow, that's insane. Do you struggle over how much money you give to your family?
Yeah, it's a fine line between denying and giving to the kids. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a fine line. But my wife and I have both come from working class factories, working class families. So you know, we know the price of everything. We want the kids to appreciate it. But it is very difficult. You know, I think that all my kids, because they've always, I wouldn't say they've always had what they want, but they've lived a comfortable life. Dad's helped them in any way I could, but I don't give them millions
mm-hmm.
to go and to pour down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, it's a fine line. It really is. You know, I don't think we spoil the kids.
Are there any songs in your catalog that you regret recording, that you just don't like these days and you think that you shouldn't have done?
No, not at all.
No.
No, not at all. There's none. I'm proud of everything I've done.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of one song I'm embarrassed about. I've heard it on the radio, you know. Even my first recordings, like a Good Morning Little Schoolgirl, Muddy Waters song, was my first ever song when I was 19.
Mm-hmm.
Even that, you know, it was a different era, but it still sounds okay.
I once was a school boy.
So I hear so many people that say rock is dead. I hear that from Gene Simmons all the time, that rock and roll is dead. So how do you respond to people saying that?
No, I don't think so. Rock and roll is a rock and roll is a big tent. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot in that tent. A lot of country music now is, it's hard to know what country music is and what rock and roll, the lines have been blurred.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you can say that when the Rolling Stones go out and to do the biggest tours ever.
Right.
There is competition, you know. I'm not a great lover of rapper. I don't love rap, but I do like hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think it's dead.
Yeah, do your kids play new music ever? Do you hear new artists that you enjoy?
Oh, all the time, yeah, the two of them, yeah. I don't know where they learn the words to the rap songs, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
They like dad's music, but they're not over the moon with it.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's a different era. I don't mind.
So your two youngest, they like hip-hop?
No, the one likes a lot of the rap stuff,
mm-hmm.
which is difficult for him to listen to because there's so many, you know, so many of the F and cussing words in there.
Right.
So we have to be careful. But the younger one likes, he likes a lot of stuff. He likes dad's music a bit. But they're both hung up on this Fortnite now.
Oh, God.
You know what that is?
Yeah, yeah. I have
two
nephews that are obsessed with it.
Obsessed. Do you play it?
No, I've watched them play it. It's like a foreign language to me. I have no clue what they're doing or anything.
No, me neither.
Oh,
don't, Dad, I'm just finishing the game. Dad, no, dinner's on the table. No, I've got to finish the game, Dad. Oh. And it all goes off. Unbelievable.
So do you, I limit their screen time?
Yeah, we do now. We've got them under control because I said if you don't do as you're told, I'm going to cut the internet for the entire house.
Yeah.
So now they're pretty good at it, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
And I can't do it. I can't play all those games. I'm too old.
Right.
Too old to pick it up now.
Hot. So tell me the music that you play at home that you find the most moving, that you find the most emotional to hear as a listener.
Well, you know what, I don't, because I'm, you know, it seems every hour of the day I'm wrapped up right now in my own music,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I don't really have time to, I might listen to some things on the radio, but nothing specific, you know, I'm a big Prefab Sprout fan.
All my lazy teenage boys are my high precision ghosts.
I love Paddy McLoone.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you know, if I put anything on, it probably might be anything from Billie Holiday to, I don't know, you know, everything. I love music, period. I'm
yeah.
a musicologist.
Do you still play Sam Cooke and stuff in your spare time? To...
Yeah, we do when we have dinner. We play, you know, my wife has all the songs I love on her phone and she'll put them on.
Mm-hmm. And
Sam is still my reference point, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing to think of how many songs that he recorded in a very short time period and how amazing they still sound like 60 years later.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really incredible.
Yeah, and you think of the tragedy of him and of Otis Redding, of dying so young, so pointlessly.
Yeah.
It just breaks your heart.
Well, Sam was murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's over nothing. I mean, just...
Yeah.
So, describe the feeling of being on stage and the band starts playing Maggie May and the crowd explodes. Just like, what's that feel like to watch that happen?
Well, I'll tell you what, they didn't the other night. we did, we played a free concert, well, I got paid,
uh-huh.
in Bucharest, in Romania,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and it was to celebrate their centenary of getting away from the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big day. So we had about 80,000 people there.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful stage they made for me and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But we realized that songs like Rhythm of My Heart, Downtown Train,
mm-hmm.
and about two or three others, you could tell the people loved it because they all lit their light, they put their cameras up. And Maggie May, we didn't have any of that. They didn't know it.
Wow,
so
really?
Funny. Yeah,
well,
it's so funny.
Well,
I mean, that song is so old now, really.
Yeah, I just love Downtown Train, because you heard the Tom Waits song, and you just sort of discovered, like, a different song in there, like a different melody that Eddie wasn't quite singing.
Yeah, I could hear the melody in his... I don't know if he was trying to sing the melody that I sing, but that's what I took from it. Well, lovely lyricist he is, Tom.
Yeah, he's a genius. He never tours. It's been over 10 years. He just won't go on tour.
Yeah, I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I guess he just doesn't like it.
He did thank me, Tom, through the publisher of Downtown Train, who's a good mate of mine.
Yeah.
He said, please thank Rod, he's put a swimming pool in my backyard and a new roof on my house.
Wow.
For my children.
Uh-huh.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Wow, that's great. So do you still want to be up there singing in like 10 years when you're in your 80s?
I might do, yeah. I might just turn my hand to the American Songbook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love singing those songs, and I'd love to just get a big band together and reminisce about the. You know, I just love those songs. I don't know. I really don't know, mate. I haven't thought, but well, I do think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to give up what I'm doing now, I would dearly love to do that.
Yeah.
You know, those albums, they sold nearly 30 million, so there's a ready-made audience out there for it.
Are you still close to Ron Wood? Do you still see him a lot?
Yeah, I don't see him as much as I used to. Obviously, when I'm working, they're off, and mm-hmm. when they're working, I'm on. But we do text to each other now and then.
I guess tell me about your fitness routine and how you stay in shape these days.
Well, today's, I was let off lightly because I had a band dinner last night. We all got, you know, well plastered.
Mm-hmm.
But today I started off in my gym doing strengthening legs
mm-hmm.
for half an hour, you know, with, you know, the rubber bands and things
right.
put around your legs
mm-hmm.
and builds the muscle up. And then I went straight to my new pool and did 12 lengths. And then I start doing diving. I've got a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Start doing diving stuff like the Navy SEALs. He throws a weight in, and I have to go down and get it.
Oh, wow.
Swim back with the weight to the side of the pool.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very interesting.
Wow!
I don't always love working out, but you know, I certainly couldn't do it if I was left to my own devices.
Pushing a concert is so much work that you need to be in shape to even do that, right? You run around so much.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, because when you're, you know, when you're, that's one of the things I learned from Mr. Sinatra.
Yeah.
You know, that you do a lot of swimming underwater
mm-hmm.
to increase the capacity
yeah.
of your lungs.
Because mm-hmm.
when you're singing, you need your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I'd be lost without them. So, yeah, I do. I take the workout very seriously. And tomorrow I'll probably get on a, I don't know, well, I have a football field here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not full-size AstroTurf, as I told you about, and I'll work on there with the ball and do some sprints, and so lucky to be doing it at 73.
Yeah, it's amazing. Do you ever think, about the element that luck played in your life to be born at the time you were, to experience rock as it was happening, to be around all those people, how much of it?
You know, especially, you know, the late 60s, and well, yeah, the 60s, you know, I didn't make it till 71,
mm-hmm.
but that was when everything was new.
Yeah.
Everything was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I often wonder why it's so difficult for kids to get on the radio now, you know, when they've got their albums coming out. Because there's so much good stuff that's gone before
yeah.
that people want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it sort of, I wouldn't say clogs up the airwaves, but it cuts down your chances.
Right.
And real good stuff, it was made in the 60s, 70s, the 80s.
Yeah. And so how much time do you spend each morning on your hair?
On my hair?
Yeah.
No, I don't. If I'm going to work out, I don't bother till the evening.
Okay.
And literally, I can do my hair in, wash it, dry it, get it standing up in 10 minutes at the most.
Oh, wow. And
real quick. It's real quick.
Right. I'm sure by now that you've down to a science.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm just so lucky I've still got it.
And happy holidays to everyone that's been today's episode of Rolling Stone Music Now. We'll be back in the new year. And we're on every Friday here at SiriusXM's Volume, channel 106 at 1 p.m. In the meantime, we are a podcast. Download us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to us if you haven't already, wherever you get your podcasts. Maybe leave us a nice review on iTunes. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you next year.